you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back to the official Project Blue Book podcast. I'm your host, Tara Bennett, a senior producer for Sci-Fi Wire. So it's hard to believe we come to the end of Project Blue Book's first season, and what a journey it has been. Unusual sightings, secret military experiments, Reese's monkeys that sure look like aliens to me, and in the big finale, UFOs in DC. So there is so much to unpack, and we've wrangled an equally impressive lineup of guests to mark the moment. We have with us creator and co-executive producer David O'Leary.
Hey, everybody.
Showrunner, executive producer Sean Jablonski.
How do?
General Valentine is in the room, Mr. Michael Harney.
Hi, everybody.
And Project Blue Book's dynamic duo, Aiden Gillen, is on the phone. Hello, sir.
Hello there, everyone.
And we have in the room with us Quinn himself, Michael Malarkey. Hello.
Hello, welcome back.
It is literally a packed room in here. David, you penned this one. You promised both of you gentlemen, Sean and David, that we would end up in D.C.
Yep.
And boy, do we end up in D.C. for this super famous sighting by the masses in the nation's capital.
That's
so
right.
You have done some big swings so far this season. You have not been shy or coy. You guys have laid out some major moments this season, and this is a big one to have such a public spectacle.
Yeah, this is a big one. I mean, the first season was sort of always conceived as headed here. This case is just such a massive case. And this really happened, which is, like, I think the most baffling thing, that over two consecutive weekends in our nation's capital, UFOs are seen and tracked on radar. Jets are scrambled to chase after these things. It's never been properly explained. I'm just so glad we were able to do it. The stakes are so high. Mm-hmm. We get to go to D.C. finally in a big, big way, go to our nation's capital, and hopefully educate audiences to these events.
You tell anybody about this story, and you have to make them look at the article to make them believe, because it's out there, and nobody believes that there were UFOs over Washington.
Yeah. So when you need to bring this kind of a big scale story to life, you need a director that can do that. And Alex Braves is your guy. What did he want to do in terms of bringing to life a lot of the big moments in this script?
Well, first of all, it's always going to start with the script. And David did such a great job. And it was a mandate for us to really elevate the finale to the scale of what it was, which is a national sighting. Alex, one of the things he said when he came in, first of all, he's the most wonderful, generous, collaborative person, reputation well-deserved. He wanted to capture the scale, but what he also wanted to do is he said, all our directors directed two episode blocks. And he said, I want to feel this is telling the story of both 9 and 10.
Yeah, it does
feel
that way.
He really felt like he wanted to tie this stuff together. And we did go back after and find some more threads and sort of put it in there. And he would just be curious a lot about things. And then those questions would drive us to make it better, find better character moments, open up story, create mystery, little lines. Even I remember being on set, just little lines that could just sort of help reveal. And it was always about a character moment, I thought. I wasn't there the whole time. I know David was. I'd certainly love to hear from Michael and Aiden about how he worked. But, you know, I've been, again, doing this way too long in a way, but maybe one of my favorite directors I've ever worked with or seen realize stuff on screen.
Aiden and Michael, this was such an important episode for the relationship and your partnership. Did it feel a little more epic, Aiden, this one? Did it feel emotionally for the both of you working on this a little more fraught because it's like a blockbuster moment in the season?
Yeah, I think knowing the mass sighting of UFOs had occurred in D.C., it was the obvious and place to go, but not everyone would have taken it on, you know, because it's hard to pull off in a TV show, you know, it's like shooting a movie in 2 weeks. And yes, there was a moment at the end of episode 9 where I was almost out of the game, yet at the start of episode 10, you're more in it than you've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And for Einik and Quinn are, by the end of it, like a whole new shunt, as in, okay, we're going to work this thing from the inside. I think they're more of a team than they've ever been, which kind of echoes Hynek's trajectory within the Air Force, within Project Blue Book, and within his own research of, I will stay inside and have access to the materials, the resources, and really try and find out what's going on. And as far as Alex Graves goes, it is about tiny little details and finding the intimate moments, putting together a big picture out of tiny little moments. He's really good actor. I'd worked on him before on Game of Thrones, and some of my favorite episodes of Game of Thrones, but he's all about detail. But he's also, having come through the West Wing, can fit a lot into an episode, because it's all that walking and talking.
Yes.
You'll do scenes that are, you'll pack twice as much into a minute than another director might, because you're just doing two things at once, and it keeps it moving along quite quick. But it was an epic thing to take on. So actually, Michael, you want to weigh in on this?
Sure, yeah. Well, though, there was a lot of scenes, speaking of that, where he was having us doing the walkie-talkies. And he was like, faster, faster. Alex knows the shot that he wants. He's one of these directors that comes in. He has the vision. He sees what he wants to do. And he knows that he's going to use this two shot of us walking. So he's like, just act the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And talk over each other and do your thing.
And do it faster. That's the kind of direction that actors like. I
have to say also with Alex, I was delighted to hear that he was going to be on board, because he gave me my first TV break.
Did he?
Yep.
Oh,
when
I remember that.
Basically, just been doing theater up to that point. I'd done a couple of tiny bits in the UK, but it was to play the lead in a pilot, and he really fought to get me in, because I'd not done much TV at all. And after that, I booked my first manager in LA, and I started working with my first manager, and I feel like I need to give him credit for that.
No, that's great.
He's a great guy and a class act, and recognizes talent when he sees it.
And it's nice for a trust standpoint, for especially Aiden, you having worked with him, Michael, you having that kind of trust and knowing that this guy's got your back, and that there is a lot of emotional heavy lifting together and then separate that your characters go through in this episode. Was there a moment that you two remember in the Heineken of it all, this episode, where he just either really worked you guys or expanded on something or let you guys kind of roll with something a little bit, that you guys ended up really enjoying what the final outcome was?
The things we were sitting at the end talking in the park about, are we going to go next to this, stick in my mind from this episode. And actually that walking and talking stuff we're talking about, that paciness is something you do need every now and then, to just give you a jolt and just remind you what you're doing here, to tell the story and literally getting on with it. You're one step ahead of the audience want more, they'll lean in closer if you're just going a little bit ahead of them.
For me, it's the feeling that he's really a part of the team and he cares. And I think what he does is instills a lot of confidence in his actors. And he's an actor's director in a way. He gives the right kind of subtle and brief notes in order to just let you discover it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not prescriptive. And he's just a really great presence on set, very calm, and knows what he wants.
Visually, he knew exactly what he wanted as well. He would communicate that with, Seekin Miles or DP. I mean, I love stuff he did, like just adding intensity to the press conference scene, which we always wanted to feel like you guys are so under the gun. And these whip pan shots over there and whip pan shots back. And my parents were actually up on set with
were
me
they?
Visiting
nice.
During that time. So they really got to see the grand scale of all that.
Well, let me ask, Mr. Harney, as you are in the Pentagon and we really get to see the inner sanctum and we get more moments with Harding and Valentine, but also we get more time with Secretary of Defense Fairchild, which really comes to a climax, and we get the president with a first reveal of Bob Gutton in this episode. But we really get a war room kind of situation at the end of this episode where you're all in there. This is now come to you in D.C. with what's going on with these lights.
It was great to be able to do numerous things at that table with Bob Gutton. Bob is such an amazing actor to work off of. For me, in terms of character, was really kind of walking a tightrope of making sure that the decisions that we make are not going to provide, quote-unquote, any type of mass hysteria.
Right.
That there can't be anything that would leak. Primarily the defense of our country, but also the awareness of leveraging the president. And in this particular scene that you're speaking about, for me, it was about silence. Alex took the camera and he just followed me. It was really a very full experience for me, sitting there in silence, watching this go down and then calculating what we were going to have to do. My uncle was a diplomat, and I know that he had his days down to every minute. He had the punctuality of princes, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that on that level, the issues are very sophisticated. There's no time, but there has to be immediate processing. And that processing needs to read. If I'm doing my job right, it has to read to people so that they can get the weight of the situation. The interest in intelligence work is that it's quiet. Oftentimes, it's intelligent because you don't know what's going on.
Yes.
And I think that in terms of character, that's really what I've embraced mostly. And Neil is such a wonderful actor. He's able to viscerally embody a hands-on, I'll take that hill attitude, and embody it in such a way that is very inspiring to the audience in regards to them being caught up in the moments of action. And that's what you want with a good story like we have.
Well, it's each of these men, you know, are carrying this massive weight on their shoulders. And like all human beings, they all handle it slightly differently,
yeah.
Right? And then, of course, in this episode, there's differing perspectives. Harding really is convinced that, he says at one point, the nature of the phenomena, of the UFO phenomena, is that it hides. And this goes against everything that we've seen before. So he really comes around, or at least publicly comes around, you know what I mean? At least what he shows us, that this may indeed be the Russians. While, of course, Fairchild is very convinced of something else. And each man has to bear the brunt of this massive weight on their shoulders in a different way, as we all would.
Focusing in on Hynek and Quinn for the moment. Quinn, he's the guy that'll say, let me go up there and see what's going on. And he literally does that. And Hynek is going, you know what? I don't know who Encina is, but I'm going to go, whatever he's calling, I'm going to go because it feels like it's an answer. So it's two men in their own way, in their own profession, going, let me get whatever answers I can get, however I get it. And so did those feel like really organic moments for the next stage of what your partnership is? Tell me about those moments in terms of being pivot moments for both of you.
As a fighter pilot, Quinn is accustomed to living on the edge,
yeah,
and flying behind enemy lines. And so for him, this was just like he had to do it, especially because at least he thinks he knows more about them than any other pilot would at the time. But also, he's witnessed some things. He is genuinely curious at this point. And through the season, there's probably audience members that are going, "Ah, Quinn, what, you know, like, just yeah, believe.
Don't you remember episode two with one with the play?"
That's right. But he keeps it all under wraps for the most part. And I think the great thing about this episode is the seeming betrayal of Hynek when Quinn recounts the tale.
Yes.
And then afterwards, the discussion. I'm interested to see where this could go. Sets it up really well.
And Aiden, in terms of Hynek being willing to chase something that feels as nebulous as possible for a scientist, is this guy that keeps showing up in dark corners and shadows and such, I think illustrates a lot about the journey he's taken all season.
That character is just symbolic of the great unknown, taking a punt on following something dangerous that you just don't understand, and it puts you in a risky, dangerous position. I think by the end of this episode, Hynek is in no doubt that he's being used,
yeah,
or that his talents are being, yeah, abused, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly used. And there's a decision made to stay on the inside and to follow this shadowy figure, if you like, into the unknown, which is kind of liberating. So I think he comes out of it by the end quite ecstatic. Certainly is the start of a new phase in his journey.
And it does completely solidify them as a team by
right,
the end. If we were ever questioning that up into the lead up, both people have gone completely to the edge and looked into the abyss.
So a nice cameo surprise that we also have for this finale episode is that we have Laura Manal, who is able to tell us a little bit about her thoughts on Mimi's close to her arc this season. Laura, I wanted to throw it to you. She was put into a very compromising position by Susie in episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
She could ignore it,
mm-hmm,
but instead she really addresses it right on the nose and says, "Can we talk?" Tell me about playing that moment and it being such a moment of her stating what she wants.
First of all, I love that scene. I really love the way it was written. And I think it's, aside from the fact that Mimi was drugged and drunk and didn't know what was going on, she did not know that she was manipulated in that way. So aside from that portion of the scene, I think that feeling and that kind of circumstance of having a really deep connection to someone that you care about and that you have very deep emotions for is something that a lot of people can probably relate to, especially the fact that maybe, yes, she does feel drawn to Susie and has this very deep emotional intimacy with her. But, you know, she also loves her husband and she's in a situation where she can't give in to that, despite the fact that they have that close connection. It's a tough call, but Mimi does have a very strong emotional integrity and she loves her husband and she loves her family and they are her world. So it's one of those moments where it's like, you are important to me. You are special to me. And I do have confusing feelings for you, but we can't go there. My world can't change. Your world can't change. This isn't meant to happen. It's a tough moment, and I empathized with her, and I think a lot of us can get that, especially with a little life experience.
She can reconnect with Hynek, and they can mm-hmm. start working together. We were alluded to that earlier in the season when, you know, he showed her the ally,
yeah.
and now we get an opportunity where she, hopefully in future stories, be more of a player with those investigations and be more of a partner with her husband as she's committed to again.
Yeah, she's definitely committed to that, and she does love Alan. I mean, I love that the real Mimi Hynek was a really interesting woman, and she did become an editor with a lot of Alan's work as well. And also, in the end, was part of the interview process with a lot of these cases. So I think that's cool and interesting. I mean, maybe we can get a whole bunch of seasons, and somewhere down the line, we can work with that. But I'd love to see where that goes.
Well, me too. John, I know that's a storyline that you've been passionate about through the whole season. And tell me about what you wanted to set her up for and, in a way, have a little bit of a chapter end for her in this.
I feel like we needed to address what happened in the previous episode
exactly.
with Mimi and Susie. And I wanted to hear it from her. She needed to be authentic to who she was, which is that she is Hynek's wife. We're not turning her into someone that is now going to want to start a relationship
with someone else,
a mistake.
Or leave her family.
Exactly.
Right.
So that felt very important. And with respect to, you know, yeah, she flipped from nine going, you need to leave Blue Book, to now I'm standing behind. I think for her, it's also seeing the stakes for the very first time, which is, wow, this is a national emergency right now. And my husband is in the middle of it and has an effect on how people are going to react. And I think that lifts her and almost gives her another sense of responsibility. And also tees up for a second season the idea that this is someone who is now as committed as her husband to sort of understanding, investigating, finding out, and following the trajectory that the real life Mimi took, which
right.
is getting more involved in her husband's work.
And in local politics as well.
Local
as
politics and yeah. school board. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, it's...
The real Hynek brothers, who are, of course, consultants on the show, have been like so helpful in us understanding the path that the real life Mimi Hynek really took in getting involved in UFO cases
right.
and taking this matter really as seriously as her husband did and contributing in ways that she could.
It was always very important to me, too, that like because in episode 4, the family was threatened. As a parent, how do you justify putting yourself, your children in harm's way? What is the trade-off you're making? And so it had to be important enough that she is willing to take these risks and accept that responsibility and finding the bug. Seeing
yeah.
what happened next door. I think she also gets to a point like Hynek does where it's like, I'm in it now.
Yep.
There is no running away.
Yeah,
I need
right.
to embrace the challenge.
Just that moment itself was important at the end of the entire season, at the end of that episode, where just all this really overwhelming stuff was happening. But at the end of the day, when they've been through all of that, they really are genuinely glad to be back
yeah.
at home. I don't think there's any hidden side going on there, you know, at least from my perspective.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't tell you what Laura was thinking or what Mimi was thinking, but Hynek was glad to be home, was glad to be through it. And, you know, that is what's ultimately important to him. The more we get to do together, the better. Most of our scenes have been quite housebound. Maybe we just need to go to space.
I like that. That's a good idea. I wanted to kind of roll down through more things that happened towards the end of this episode where we get Susie and Quinn back together in that bar. And she is also in a position of going, well, she needs to move on to what the next possible opening is for her We had a taste of it earlier in the season, but now we get a real tip up of where it could go at the end of the season, and that great chemistry again being used well on the camera.
Well, I love our stuff together. It was brief, but I felt like there was just so much there in the spaces between.
Mm-hmm. Very much.
Just makes it easy. You know, you're just watching somebody reacting to what they're doing, and it's fun. And she's brilliant. And like you said, she brings a fragility but power to it, which is a difficult line to toe. What I love about the stuff also is you see some of Quinn's fragility as far as that goes. We saw a little bit of it way back in episode 3. Yeah, you know, we're on season 12.
Right.
Haggard. It's nice to be able to see that from Quinn because, you know, he's been so focused and straightforward a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And, it's nice to see, oh, wait, maybe he does have more of a heart.
Also, just the potential of what the two of them, because they're smart. He knows how to interrogate, and she knows. And so when you just think the potential of that.
Oh, it's a Pandora's box.
It's kind of sexy. Yeah. It's kind of sweet.
Dangerous.
And then it's like, when these people actually get some time to, like, really pay attention to each other, which is the tipping up of it, you go, well, it's going to be some fireworks. That's cool.
Should have seen the first draft of that scene.
A
little more cinematic.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
I have.
Right, yes. Oh, yeah.
Really?
There was even, yes.
Rewrite.
Yes, yeah. There was a bit of there was a bit of an adjustment to make it still have the charm, but kind of have it feel not so blatant.
Ah, okay. That leaves space for dialing in where you want it to go.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to Mr. Harney, and just in terms of it sets up a different power dynamic between you and Harding at the end. You know, again, that stridency that comes across with Harding going, well, I'm waiting for Eisenhower. It feels very observational from a Valentine standpoint at the end. Does it feel like it is also a pivot point for Valentine, and that maybe his compatriot in arms that he's been working with, maybe they'll be moving in a different type of mind frame going forward between these two generals?
I think it's important for me that there are no absolutes, that anything is possible at any given moment on the world stage and certainly within the context of people's actions under my command or, as a peer with Neil. I don't allow myself to draw any conclusions, but I embrace what is occurring between us and I clock it. And that's where you're picking up the observational aspect of things. And I clock it so that I can use it in an encyclopedic way with my staff. And sometimes that requires me to do things that are exceedingly difficult in terms of having conflicts of interest. And I just hope that all of those things that are done out of a motive and an inspiration to do the right thing and basically to serve and protect.
For anybody who may not know, it's a great finale moment to see Fairchild blown up in a car, but that was based on the real defense secretary at the time, Forrestal, who was rumored to be a part of the Majestic 12, and his role in that was always said to be as someone who wanted there to be disclosure, who wanted to get the information out there. And in very short order, he went from being the defense secretary of the United States to, quote-unquote, being a manic depressive or being diagnosed with severe depression, was then taken to a military hospital on a military base, which makes sense, but also it's very closed off from the public, and then jumped out a window, took a swan dive out of a window in a very short amount of time.
Mm.
And if you think about how the optics of that would play today, and now you put it around everything that's happening with UFOs and what's going on in D.C., so it's a great piece of finale storytelling. It's also based on reality. Other things, Operation Ivy, which is the film
that
they look at in the trunk. It was a bit of a kitchen sink. There are a lot of things that happened timeline-wise that, like, Operation Ivy, the estimate of the situation.
That's right.
Forrestal's death over D.C. We definitely put a lot in there that wouldn't have all happened around that time.
That's
but
right.
It felt like a lot of a very natural fit.
Yeah.
It's also a really great punk ska band from back in the day. It was, like, one of my very first records I fell in love with, Operation Ivy.
Operation Ivy.
Yeah, that was right. They had me write that. The name on the tin because they hadn't written Operation Ivy.
Right.
So I want to write it.
Oh,
just
nice.
Because, you know, I'm a musician, as some of you may know, but the first time I ever sang live was two Operation Ivy cover songs.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
A little weird full circle.
So I just want to say there's been about a zillion synchronicities on the show, and that's another
one.
That's another one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Check out that
record.
That
is way
That
rad.
Is
great.
So crazy, but yet I'm not surprised at all because that seems to happen, like, every day.
That's amazing. Well, we'll just bring it down to the very end then. That last moment when Hynek drives out to the observatory and we get the voiceover read of the unseen letter, which basically says, it's time for you to return to your old life. I'm no longer able to protect you. But we know that's not going to be the case. He's committed to this. And it's a beautiful visual moment connecting Alan to what he does, to being in that observatory.
As scripted, it was Hynek at home with Joel's telescope and having a moment, which we did shoot. And then watching the final, once you put it all together, the editing room, it just didn't feel grand enough. And there was the footage that is used in episode 10 was what we shot in episode 1.
Oh, really?
That never made it in because it just felt like it had slowed down the early storytelling. And so we had built this huge observatory with this giant telescope at great expense that was meant to really show Hynek in his element and how he functioned, and we never got a chance to see it. And so I was like, let's see if we can mend this together.
Yeah.
And even so, the letter that he opens from Unseen, all VFX, that actually played as something else in 101.
Wow.
So we erased it with VFX and put in Unseen's thing, and it all sort of came together. The letter actually didn't exist, I think, in the script. It was something that when you looked at the footage, you're like, well, wait, he's got this piece of paper. We can cut around it, but we can use this. And that
right.
became the letter from Unseen. So the serendipity of being, man, we were always so bummed we could never use that observatory in episode one. And here we are closing out the season with it where it felt right.
One of my favorite shots in the show is just we're up on the telescope and we travel down the telescope to Hynek and we got to use it.
And I'm really glad that that is what happened, because when I first read the script way back whenever that was the thing that jumped out at me, was when they were describing Hynek out at the observatory on his own, looking through this telescope into the unknown, essentially. I thought, I want to know who this is. Not only do I want to know who he is, I want to be him. So it's really nice that you've used that to end this.
Aiden, you know, you got to have quite the journey with this character, just in terms of being in the skin of someone that you make your own very special connection with, that that's individual to you and the process that you do to inhabit him as a person and bring him to screen. What was most satisfying this year?
I'm sure all of us actors here at the moment, you know, it's about making the small moments from second to second mean something and be truthful. Honestly, by the time we were finished, I was quite exhausted. You know, I felt like we'd been through a lot. We'd been in a lot, you know, just literally in the studio or on set, like most days of the week I was anyway. And then you're just learning your stuff at the weekend. So it was very involved and intense. And I was a bit flaked out by the end and pleasantly exhausted. So I walked away feeling satisfied. Definitely curious for what might happen next, but, you know, not really wanting to go there yet. And certainly privileged to have had an opportunity to at least attempt to get inside the skin and clothes of this real person who was quite phenomenal in many ways and simple in many ways. You know, a family man, a searcher, an innovative scientist, just so many different kinds of things. And just looks like a man you could see walking down the street.
An everyday hero. And then certainly the dynamic between you and Michael this season, now a partnership that is a truly special one. As Quinn says at one point, you've grown on me like a barnacle.
And I think that
the two of you certainly have made a partnership that's just been a joy to watch all season long. And the last thing that we see for this whole episode is that amazing sequence in the frozen tundra with the obelisk. Hey, jaw droppers, anyone? That's a way to end a season. So obviously, obviously, obelisks have a whole lot of mythology. We even see it in some of the drawings earlier in the very, very beginning when Hynek was looking at the projections. So it's kind of a full circle moment, but it's certainly a very weighted moment with that visual. So where'd it come from?
There's so many theories about where any sort of UFOs come from or alien life comes from. There's certainly Ancient Aliens theory, which also airs on our network History.
Yes.
And the obelisk being this, you know, we talked about Fuller very early on being antennas. And so the fact that there could be something on this planet that actually was sort of left behind or allows this sort of communication. I mean, there's a very well-tread theory about the pyramids themselves being something that taps into an energy source, and that's really what they were about. There's the pyramids in Antarctica. There's a lot of stuff now that's supposedly being uncovered now that things are thawing.
Yes. Yes,
I got very wrapped up into the whole idea of how many heads of state have have been recently visiting Antarctica and all of the current energy and focus that's going on down there. You know, Buzz Aldrin, John Kerry, the day of the election, John Kerry goes to Antarctica. There's a high-ranking bishop and one of the Russian people who haven't shook hands in 500 years from a religious standpoint show up together and sort of bless Antarctica as the cradle of civilization. It's very interesting stuff. But more to the point, this notion of peeling back yet another layer. We want to always feel like there is more story that's opening up here because there really is. Right. It's not just about lights in the sky. So.
Absolutely. And then all we try to do is kind of layer, you know, if people go back and look at some of the clues and, mm-hmm. you know, the Easter eggs we leave along the way, the Polaroid, the numbers that are coordinates to Antarctica, the film itself that Hynek sees in the very first episode, if you were to slow down the frames, mm-hmm. right, you're seeing the Washington Monument, you're seeing a quick black obelisk, you're cutting back.
Yes.
All those kinds of things that we just tried to layer in as little seeds to where we're ultimately going.
So we leave ourselves with our homework assignment this summer, guys. Now we know what we're going to go do. Let's go back. I want people coming back on social media and telling me all the things that you found in every episode.
So curious.
But as always, thank you guys for being here all season long. Every single one of you have given us so much more insight into your process, into what has made all these stories so compelling and us just falling in love with the characters. We thank you for that. And here is to season two, guys.
Thanks so much. It's a real privilege
thank you for being here.
And thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks a lot.
It's good to be here.
Aiden, thank you, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Aiden.
Okay. Big love to you, brother.
Okay. Talk soon.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, as always, to our wonderful guests for coming in. This was a mega show and a great way to end the whole season. I want to thank Aiden calling in from across the sea. Thank you so much, sir. And as always, I'd like to thank those that were in the studio with me. David, Sean, Michael, and Michael. They really added to the whole conversation. And I want to thank our special cameo with Laura, who was able to sneak in a little thoughts about Mimi and her arc at the end of the season. Also, always, thank you so much all season long to my wonderful podcast team. They make this podcast sound as great as it does all season long, and hopefully gives you a really wonderful listening experience. Producer Kirby Dixon, producer-editor Paul Terry, mixer and master Dave Draper, and LA Digital Recording for being our home all season long. If you do enjoy the show, let us have a review on whatever subscription service you prefer. It really helps let Project Blue Book have a nice standing in the podcast placement, and it also just helps the show in general. And thank you to all of our listeners all season long. Great support, lots of great comments, even some wonderful fan art, which we can't thank you enough for, that makes our hearts smile and also gives us something to put on our computer backgrounds. And so thank you very much for going on this journey with us all season long. Keep watching the skies.